Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show, where we talk about the business of sports, both big and small. I'm Joe Favorito, flying solo this week for my co-host Tom Richardson. And we're going to talk today about one of the two sports that always keeps coming up when people say fastest growing team sports in the United States. One is rugby. The other is lacrosse. And today joining us is going to be Ashley Dabb, who is the Chief Marketing Officer for the National Lacrosse League, which, for those of you who don't know, is the fast-growing indoor league in the United States, professional league for men, sometimes called box lacrosse. And we're going to talk about the NLL's growth, its digital-first strategy, how Ashley, as the CMO of a fast-growing league, got to where she is, and touch on some of the other things that people who normally listen to our show may not know about lacrosse or who are lacrosse enthusiasts can learn a little bit more. So, Ashley, welcome to the Cusp Show.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into NLL and what it is and where it is, and like I said, the digital-first strategy, you have an interesting background coming from soccer, which is another sport that is kind of really popular amongst the people who listen to our show, with the Philadelphia Union. So why don't you just kind of walk us through quickly how you got to where you are at the NLL through MLS and some of the places you've been.
Sure. So I did my undergrad at St. Joe's University in Philly, and I was actually graduating college right around the time that the new MLS team in Philadelphia was launching. So I had a bunch of sports internships going through school and really knew I wanted to be in the sports marketing space. So I was fortunate enough to get hired by the new MLS team. They didn't have a name, a logo, players. Essentially, I was the first staff member besides a consultant and the CEO and operating partner, Nick Sakevich. So it was a great experience to learn on the fly and definitely learn a lot in a short amount of time. So I started there as an administrative coordinator, basically doing whatever needed to be done, whether it was ordering staples for the office or looking at our virtual seat viewer with our VP of ticket sales. So it was a really great experience, and was able to move my career forward there by kind of additionally getting promoted. And then I left the union as the vice president of marketing and communications, and had the second largest department in the organization behind ticket sales. And there we handled everything from digital marketing, our media buying, communication strategies, press releases, and then even our game operations and any of our events. So we had a pretty well-rounded department. And then I was there for almost 10 years, and was kind of looking for the next challenge. I would say I have an entrepreneurial spirit, so I was looking to kind of make a change. So that's how I joined the National Lacrosse League, and I've been here just about 2 years, where I oversee all of our marketing, communications, digital, with a heavy focus on digital. So in the first year or so of me being here, we've built our own OTT platform, rebranded the league and the logo, and then also rebuilt the website. So that was the other sort of attractor for me to move on from the union and work at the National Lacrosse League, not only because it's the fastest growing sport, but also, the work that I would be tasked with.
So let's talk a little bit about, you touched on both NLL and MLS as properties, and you know, you've worked in both, really an MLS team from the start, and really kind of a relaunch or a new start for a league like the NLL that has been around for a while. What are some of the key things that are the same and were the same in both jobs that you saw, whether it was soccer or lacrosse? Are there parallels that worked in both?
Yeah, I definitely think that there is a lot of parallels. I mean, if you hear the commissioner speak, he'll talk about a tale of two leagues. It's eerie how many similarities as far as challenges go. I mean, both essentially lacrosse and soccer, lacrosse being still more niche, but soccer was as well. So trying to take a niche sport into more mainstream, the more mainstream sports landscape, I think is a very similar challenge. I think the audience, so we have arguably, not just because I work there, the product is more entertaining. Indoor lacrosse is fast paced. The ball's always moving, you know, so rather than soccer, which kind of draws on a little bit. So the sport is fundamentally different from an entertainment property standpoint. So I think that's one of the unique things we've been able to exploit rather than soccer. But I think the other similarity would be just sort of the millennial demo focusing on a younger audience, the rise of digital. I think for us at Lacrosse, it's sort of an inflection point for the league because we have the ability now to go direct to consumer, whereas in years past, the league's been around for 32 seasons. We haven't had that opportunity, and the sport being, you know, smaller didn't obviously have the resources to do either big media buys or do big TV rights deals. So the OTT proposition is certainly one that has been a great asset for our league.
And touching on the OTT side, recently there was an announcement where NLL was up on a stage with Adam Silver and Lenny Daniels and David Levy from Turner as being part of the launch for what will be Turner's property, Bleacher Report Live, which will be their streaming service. How did that come about, and how will a partnership with a platform like Turner and Bleacher Report help the NLL grow?
It came about through our CRO, Kevin Morgan, and David Sternberg is our broadcast consultant. They've really been sort of pounding the pavement as it relates to a media rights deal. And as we are a digital first league, it really was high on our radar to find a digital rights property as opposed to looking for a linear TV deal. And so, you know, they spent months with RFPs and looking at sort of who would be the right partner in the space for us. And that's really what we were looking for, is a partner, not someone to just sort of put us on their platform. And with Turner, you know, meeting pretty much all the folks that will be involved in the project, we're very excited. I mean, they're really bought into not only the sport of lacrosse, but NLL and what we're doing sort of as a strategic vision. So we're excited to be partners with them. And as you mentioned, we launched or announced it last week. The platform will be launching shortly, and we'll have our 2018-2019 season on NLL season on Bleacher Report Live. And we're excited because it'll be a multifaceted deal, not just, again, putting our sport on their property, but also some marketing, you know, best practices and really just a transformational partnership as far as the exposure and the reach, because that's essentially what we're looking at from an NLL. Our biggest challenge is scaling our business. You know, we know we have a great product and property, but really need to get some scale. And we think that Turner is and Bleacher Report Live is the way to do that.
You know, we shouldn't neglect the fact that some people may not know where franchises are right now, who some of the owners are, especially. So two things. Why don't you take us a little bit of a kind of like National Lacrosse League 101 as to how long the season is, where the franchises are, and who some of those interesting owners are that have both been around but also really have come into the league, not just for now, but for the next couple of years.
Sure. So as part of myself and others joining the league, a key focus is on thoughtful expansion. So currently we have 9 teams playing across North America. We have Toronto, Saskatchewan, Georgia. And so with this season, it starts early December, and it will run through basically Memorial Day weekend, culminating with the championship games. But then next season, which again will be in a similar time frame, we'll have 2 new teams online with the San Diego Seals and the Philadelphia Wings. So the team, those 2 teams will bring us to 11 total teams across North America. And so we're excited, obviously, to keep expanding. But I would say some of the kind of more unique owner stories is obviously with Philadelphia, Comcast Spectacor firmly believes in the product. And so they've invested. This will basically be their second team. So they're an expansion team. And then also Joe Tsai with the San Diego Seals. He's a Yale grad, actually played lacrosse at Yale. So he's a real passion for the sport, which is nice. He's not just, you know, sort of writing a check. He's firmly invested in growing the sport, looking at making it an Olympic sport, hopefully one day. We feel that box really lends itself to the Olympics. So he's been heavily engaged. And then we have Pagula, their sports property. Obviously, they own multiple teams, but they own the Buffalo Bandits, and they've been very engaged in helping us grow sort of the vision in the league as well.
And Josiah, obviously, the co-founder of Alibaba, not bad having someone in who also just happened to be buying in as the minority owner of the Brooklyn Nets recently, too. So obviously some pretty interesting owners. Let's talk about kind of your day-to-day, Ashley. Marketing a league versus marketing a team when you worked at the union. What are kind of the similarities, but also what are the differences, and what do those team structures look like when they're trying to sell tickets and build brand in marketplace? So what are the similarities from a league perspective that you're doing now, and kind of what are the differences from when you worked at a team?
Sure. I mean, ultimately, you're still marketing a sport, so that would be the biggest similarity. It's just from a league level, you have to think what's best for, you know, the 9 or soon to be obviously 11 member clubs, the uniqueness of each of those markets, you know, so having a overall marketing strategy and plan that is good for all of them is something that's definitely different as opposed to a team. You're very much involved in your market and the strategy that work best for your marketplace. So the other thing I would say is like lead time I found is something that's a vast difference. So at a team, you know, sports folks, I think, are used to moving 1,000 miles an hour and, you know, sometimes creating things on the fly. You're always looking for an opportunistic sales opportunity and, you know, something as simple as, okay, we're going to have a blizzard, so we're going to run a ticket promotion around how many inches of snow. Whereas at a league level, you know, you really need to allow more time for planning, execution of it, but also just overall communication. You know, because you're communicating to 11 different constituents, and they're trying to do 1,200 other things for their team business. And so making sure that you allow enough time for them to execute it, fully understand the program, if they have any questions. So it's a longer process, I would say, than the team side. I feel like you can react and integrate programs much quicker.
In the short time, well, relatively short time, there's obviously been a lot of growth with the league. What are some of the things when you look back from when you started to now are probably the 2 or 3 things that you want people to know that have changed and are really kind of the emerging touch points that make the league different?
I think, as I mentioned before, I mean, just the product itself, you know, while we believe in ourselves and our staff, we're not rocket scientists, and the sport itself has sustained itself based on its product. It's entertaining. I am not, or did not come to this league as a lacrosse, quote unquote, a lacrosse person. I never played this sport. I was, you know, aware of it, but I wasn't necessarily ingrained in it. And watching a game, I can tell you, Champions Cup last year, the Saskatchewan Rush versus the Georgia Swarm, was one of the most entertaining sporting events I've ever been to. And that's why essentially it's survived, you know, for this long. But I think from our standpoint, just that we are a digital first league, it's very important to us as we continue to create our strategies and really expose people to the league. You know, we believe in that, obviously, with the partnership of BR Live, and making sure that, you know, they know that it's not just, well, it is lacrosse, it's also entertainment. 60% of our fans have never, like myself, touched a lacrosse stick and are just going for the sort of the party atmosphere. So it's a really great time. And I think that's why we have a significant value proposition over, you know, something like the MLS, where maybe it's not as exciting, or baseball. You know, obviously they're losing the younger demos as well. So I think we have a great opportunity to capitalize on that, because at the core of it, our product is awesome. You know, as Nick has said before, it's ticket sellable because it is so exciting.
How does when people think about lacrosse, who may not know the sport that well, they probably think about the outdoor game first. How do the outdoor game skills or marketing translate to the indoor game? There obviously is an outdoor league. Are there similarities in the way people consume? Is it the same fan base, or are the two fan bases totally different?
I would say on a large scale, they're probably pretty different. Like I said, 60% of our consumers aren't going for the lacrosse product. They're going for the entertainment value of it. So whereas I think the outdoor league, it skews more to, you know, traditional lacrosse players. There, you know, the sort of analogy that we make is if you think of soccer, you know, so traditionally it's played outdoor, but many teams actually play indoor to hone their foot skills in a tighter space. The same is true in box lacrosse. Now you're seeing a sort of a boom of box lacrosse. U.S. Lacrosse, in partnership with us, released youth rules for the first time ever. You're also seeing entities like U.S. Boxla who are showing the importance of box, because I think, too, a lot of the American coaches woke up and said, why are the best players in the NCAA Canadian? It's because they play box. So it's a great time for us to capitalize on sort of that buzz and the swell from the grassroots level. And the other thing from a player perspective is the inclusion of American players in our game. And I think Tom Schreiber is sort of the shining example of that. He's a Princeton grad, played field his whole life, and he has successfully made the transition to box lacrosse to the NLL. And I think he's sort of showing other American players that it is possible. While the rules may be different, the space is tighter, you have to react quicker, you can make the transition and be successful. You know, he was Rookie of the Year last year. He's unfortunately been out with an injury, but he's arguably could be a league MVP. So I think that's really helped also illuminate the possibility for American field players to look at entering our league after college.
And speaking of players, one of the other interesting aspects of box lacrosse is the opportunity for Native Americans. There are, mm-hmm. I believe, 20 or 21 Native American athletes playing in the league now, this year, according to some of the numbers that I saw, which is pretty unique given the fact that there are probably maybe three or four other athletes in other sports who happen to be Native Americans. How interesting or valuable is that from a marketing perspective, and who are some of those players who are Native Americans who people should be watching?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely valuable in the sense that it's different. We also have a Native American owner in the Rochester Nighthawks with Kurt Steyer. So it's a unique story to tell. It's certainly something that we look to promote. You know, it makes us very different from any other league. So we supported from a league-wide marketing initiative perspective the Native American History Month because it makes us unique and different, and quite honestly, it's authentic. So rather than trying to be something that we're not, these players are in our league. Some of sort of the most notable, I would say, are the Thompson brothers. They play in Georgia and also at the Saskatchewan Rush. You know, they've really sort of put box lacrosse back on the map in the Native American community. They obviously have strong ties to the game of lacrosse itself, being, you know, the creator's game. So it's nice to see that we can provide an outlet not only for them to play, but also, you know, shed some more light on the Native American community.
Great. One other thing I want to touch on, which you've touched on, is kind of the digital first nature. A lot of sports are trying to figure out how to become more applicable to an audience that is looking at a phone all the time or is thinking about mm-hmm. not going to a big screen, but they're going to an online property or a streaming property, an OTT property first. How did the league find that as an opportunity? And then talk a little bit about how is it exploited and the numbers that you guys have seen, which have really made it kind of a really unique success story in sports so far.
Sure. Yeah, I think looking, you know, even as I mentioned with Kevin and David, looking at sort of our value proposition as it relates to broadcast, we saw very quickly as a niche sport, linear TV didn't make sense for us for quite a few reasons. But really, like you said, the evolution of what is quote-unquote TV watching. Now, if you ask a 14-year-old kid, they're going to look at their phone and say, I'm watching TV. So really trying to capitalize on that movement of, you know, now we have second screen, third screen viewing habits. So it really is, again, an inflection point for us at the league because it's economical for us not only to pursue this strategy, but it's where the consumers are. We can go direct to them as opposed to, and we can control the message, more importantly, as opposed to going through, you know, a third party necessarily. So it's been really successful for us, and I think that's what led us to the deal with Turner and BR Live. You know, we did a Game of the Week partnership with Twitter. We're in our second season, and we averaged just about 350,000 viewers per game, which again told us that our audience is scalable, and it's across the country, across the globe. And then with NLL TV, our own property, we have just about 25,000 free and paid subscribers. So again, really encouraging numbers to show that there is an appetite for not only viewing the property, but that we're in the right space, that consumers are looking at us. On Twitter, 70% of our viewership is under the age of 35. So again, it just speaks to where sort of broadcast is going, and it's now much more about streaming via, a digital device, whether that's a connected TV or your phone or your iPad.
In terms of growth, you mentioned Philadelphia, San Diego with some pretty impactful owners coming on board mm-hmm. next year. For people who aren't sure of where the growth areas are geographically in the United States, what are some of the growth areas for lacrosse as a sport and box specifically and markets that you guys may be looking to going forward, with the right owner, the right partner, the right arena?
Right. Yeah, I think, ultimately it's about that. I think lacrosse itself as a sport, it's growing 9% a year, which is encouraging. So there's a lot of potential markets, I think, on the list to look at, but obviously sort of the New York, Long Island area, a hotbed for lacrosse. There's actually a very large following of box lacrosse in Dallas. There's a league there, essentially. As you see with the onboarding of San Diego and Philly, those were hot markets as well. And then also in Canada. So we have currently about half our teams in Canada. So there's definitely key markets in Canada. And then even looking, at the West Coast, San Francisco, you could always have two California teams. I think these are all sort of the hotbeds for lacrosse. So again, as you mentioned, if we have the right building deal, the right ownership group, and the market has an interest in lacrosse, that's where we're looking to hopefully expand.
So Ashley, one of the things obviously that people are looking for is diversity. And at one point that there were games on traditional TV, and you've obviously changed to a digital-first platform. How's the diversity and the accessibility of broadcast or of even of access to the product changed since you guys have made that switch?
I think it's fundamentally changed it. Trying to look for a lacrosse game on linear TV, maybe four games a year would be on TV. Now we're able to give you access to 81 games a year, essentially on demand, both live and on demand. So you're seeing from an audience perspective, it's skew much younger, which is obviously encouraging for us as sort of the strategy builders of the league, that we're bringing in a lot younger fans, which is great because our biggest challenge in delivery of the sport has been unlocking the entertainment property outside of the arenas. So certainly I think over the coming years you'll see a much younger audience, and it again just speaks to sort of the reasoning for why we're a digital first league.
Great. And just a reminder to everyone, we're talking to Ashley Dabb, the Chief Marketing Officer of the National Lacrosse League. Before we let you go, Ashley, there are two questions we'd like to ask, especially since a lot of the people who listen to this are students or people looking for new jobs. Number one is,
yep,
how do you stay up to date with everything that's going on? What do you read? Who do you follow? And then secondly, when people come to you, especially being a woman who's risen in the ranks, what advice do you give to people looking to get involved? So how do you stay involved? And then what is it that, what advice do you give to people?
Sure. I think, reading, especially at a high level, is important. Of course, I read the sort of sports Bible, sports business journal. But then now you're seeing obviously an uprising in more digital properties. We actually saw them the other day, but I get John Wall Street into my inbox every morning, scanning that Recode I get every morning. And I may not read every article in depth, but just sort of scanning to see the latest topics or trends. If there's something that piques my interest, certainly looking at that a little more in depth. And then on social media, I follow all the leagues just to see what they're doing. The NBA is something I've been looking at more frequently just because of their sort of cutting edge ideas. They just announced microtransactions. So I think they're sort of paving the way in digital. So follow all the leagues, most of the commissioners if they're on social, and you know, Darren Revel, some of the sports writers, just again see what's being talked about, any trends that are emerging, you know, especially being digital focused, trying to stay ahead of any, you know, Snapchat changes its platform, which they have, or Facebook changes an algorithm, making sure that we're on that in real time and getting out that information to our teams is also important. And then to answer your second question, you know, as sort of cliche as it sounds, just networking is important as a student, I think, just making sort of your name in the conversation, top of mind, while a company may not have a job right away, you know, having an informational interview just to kind of have that conversation is important. And then try to, you know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, try to differentiate yourself, whether that's learning to code, speaking a second language, because unfortunately today, you know, many students are coming out of college. So you have a college degree and so do 50 other kids who are coming out of school looking to get hired. So how can you give yourself a point of differentiation? Like I said, whether that's learning how to code, you can speak another language, or with the rise of esports, you know, maybe you're big into esports, to sort of carve your niche out.
And then lastly, where can people wanting to find out more information about the new TV deal or where they can follow on social? What are some of the handles that you'd love people to kind of latch on to?
Yes, appreciate that question. So NHL.com is our website, and you can find the latest and breaking news on there. And then our social channels are at NLL. We're on pretty much every channel, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, even LinkedIn. Also, if you're looking for jobs, check LinkedIn, and we'll post anything we have open there.
Great. Ashley Dabb, the Chief Marketing Officer of the National Lacrosse League. Once again, thanks for joining us on the Cusp Show this week.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Once again, this was the Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Joe Favorito for my co-host, Tom Richardson. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you down the line.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and my co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student Reese Heidman. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other key platforms. You can also find it at blogtalkradio.com/TheCuspShow. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU_SPS_sports. Also, you can find out more about our program, Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.